Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, pledging to help end child hunger in the Carolinas through ongoing support of Second Harvest Food Bank of Metrolina. Details about this initiative at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. In the last 10 years, from 2010 to 2020, North Carolina's Latino population grew five times faster than the state's non-Latino population. Latino numbers are up 40%, and that means that the Latino representation among our elected officials, which has historically been low, has gotten worse. Our state has never elected a Latino U.S. representative or senator, and there have been only a few elected to the General Assembly. And the proposed changes to our Republican-drawn legislative and congressional maps, currently under review by the state Supreme Court, threaten to make it even harder for the Latino vote to gain traction. This hour, we take a closer look at this and at the implications of making it more difficult to vote and of underrepresentation. And we're joined by WFAE's political reporter, Steve Harrison. Good morning, Steve. Well, I hope I hear you soon. Dorian Call is Director of Civic Engagement Research at the National Association of Latino Elected and Appointed Officials. He joins us from California's Inland Empire this morning. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Mike. Great to be here.
And Wendy Mateo Pascual is a Latino voting advocate in Charlotte and creator of the Latino Civic Engagement Program. Thank you for joining us, too, Wendy. Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
So, Steve, let me begin with you, because as I said, the U.S. Latino population has grown. It's grown from 50.5 million in 2010 to 62.1 million in 2020 across the nation, meaning that Latinos account for 51% of the entire U.S. population growth in that time period. Meanwhile, in North Carolina, our population has grown by 40%, our Latino population, in that same period. They make up 11% of the state's population. Is that lag in the population's representation at higher political offices due to a lack of candidates running for those offices, or is something else at work here?
So, it is, I think, when you said a lack of candidates running, that is a huge part of it. The other part is, you have this incredible population growth, but there is a tremendous lag among the number of Latinos who are registered and eligible to vote. You talked about 11% of the state's population is now Latino, but among registered voters in North Carolina, it's a little over 3%. So it's a huge gap between who can go to the polls and who's here. If you look nationwide, I think 50% of Latinos are eligible to vote across the country. North Carolina, it's about 34%. We are the second to lowest state. I think Tennessee may be lower than us. So we've got a tremendous, a large number of people who weren't born here, who are not yet eligible to vote, a large number of people under 18 who can't vote. So while we're seeing this huge growth in North Carolina, there's this big lag in terms of kind of showing their, you know, flexing their muscle at the polls.
Is Wendy, since you work on the ground in this area of the world, amongst the Latino population, as Steve said, they're 11% of the total population, but only 3% of the registered voters. Of the population, however, how many of them would be qualified to register to vote if they would only do so?
As Steve mentioned, the population is really young, especially in Mecklenburg County. So about 7% of the population will be available to register to vote, but we are still having a lot of people that are under 18 that cannot register yet.
Okay. And Dorian, your organization, the National Association of Latino Elected and Appointed Officials, did a 2020 census profile of our state, which takes an in-depth look at how the Latino population here has grown since the last census. And one of its findings, aside from the 40% growth rate from 800,000 people to over a million, is that this increase was enough to give this state an additional congressional seat. and that this portion of our population is younger. So two questions. Since the Latino population growth helped to result in this additional congressional seat, we will now have 14 congressional districts, not 13. Is anyone running in that new district or as a result of that additional district and the population growth who happens to be Latino?
Right. So a couple of things, right? So certainly I think the Latino growth contributed to the overall growth of the state, and therefore certainly the additional congressional seat. You know, I think one of the question is really about where some of this growth happened. And because the Latino growth happened across the entire state, certainly a lot of the redrawing of the map certainly should reflect that, right? Ultimately, I think one of the key things here is really about providing the state's growing Latino community and other underrepresented groups with a fair opportunity to really elect a candidate who's not only responsive to that community, but also accountable to their needs. You know, I think it's going to be one of those things that because of the pending litigation and because of the proposed maps, certainly, I think from our point of view is really about that, right? It's really about providing the state's growing Latino community and other representative groups that opportunity. You know, I think the other thing that I would add about that is the fact that because of this tremendous growth, certainly in areas like Charlotte, certainly in Winston-Salem, certainly the maps should represent that as well. And I think that's really key. If you know, and certainly if it doesn't, which it appears to be the case in a lot of the different maps, certainly making sure that redrawing those maps do take into consideration what I've mentioned.
And Dorian, as Wendy mentioned a minute ago, much of the population, Latino population, is younger and perhaps too young to vote. Is that the only implication of what you found, that a lot of these members of this population are younger, or are there other implications of youth?
Right. I mean, I think with regards to voting, certainly, you know, I think there's two things, right? I think one is that the Latino population is much younger, and therefore a lot of the population will come of age and continues to come of age. Certainly that eligible or the citizen voting age population continues to grow in the state of North Carolina. And certainly it's a trend across the entire country. Latinos tend to be younger, a younger community. But I think one of the other things, and I think Steve mentioned it already, and certainly you've mentioned it with regards to the registered population. And the fact of the matter is that there has to be a lot more investment and a lot of more resources to make sure that the Latino community is registered, right? For those that are citizen voting age population, those that are eligible to be registered to vote. So those resources, you know, haven't traditionally been within the Latino community. Certainly organizations like Wendy's and others that are working specifically to get the vote out, if you will, with the entire Latino population, it's somewhat difficult if you do not have the resources to do so. And that's something that we've seen over and over again. One last point that I'll make about this too, and I think this is really critical, is the fact that, you know, you also have to make it where the Latino community has access to be able to register, right? Not make it harder. And we've seen it in many different states where, you know, where when you actually do give a much easier sort of path to be able to register to vote if you're eligible, to be able to vote and not make it harder, not make certain things that are a lot harder for you to be able to vote. And I think that's also key. And all those things sort of compound, right? You end up having a community that, yes, does have a lower turnout rate than other communities, certainly. I'll stop there.
Well, and we'll talk some more about making it more difficult to vote a little bit later on.
Can I?
Wendy,
can
yes,
I,
please. Yes.
Yeah. I will say that to invest on registered voter, but also to educate the people how the government work and why they need to participate, because we have two type of voter on the Latino community. You have the first generation immigrant that became a naturalized citizen in the United States. And those people, most of them are registered to vote the same day that they get the citizenship. But then they don't have the information why and how to vote. And then you have also the children that are born here that they get to the point that they can vote, and they also doesn't have the information. So the investment has to be not only on to educate people to register to vote, but after they are registered, to educate and encourage people to go to the poll and vote. Because that is one of the situations that we are seeing, that many of the people that are already registered, they are not going to the poll. So we need to invest also to educate people and why it's important to go to the poll.
More than half of all of the state's Latinos live in one of the 10 largest counties, and here in Mecklenburg, they account for 15.2% of the population. Charlotte is the number two city in the state in terms of Latino population. Winston-Salem is number one, believe it or not. We're number two. What should that mean, Wendy, for Latino representation on city councils and town councils and the county commission and on the various school boards? What should that mean?
Yeah. That should mean a lot, but unfortunately, we have zero representation of the Latino community at the local level. And that is one of the things that we have been working in the last 4 years to increase that representation, that more people can go in front and run for position, that we can have a voice on the table. But one of the things that I have found in the work that I have been doing in Mecklenburg is two things. One, that the community is so young, and the other thing, that many of the Latino is still in the process to make the American dream. So, and is still fighting to be established in the community, and they have not yet gave that step to start running for position. But I think that will change soon. I think that as the community is aging, we will have more representation, we'll have more people running for position. For example, when last year, when the city opened the opportunity for a seat on Charlotte, we have 4 Latinos that put their name in the bucket and try to run for the city. So we'll see more and more people running now from now on.
Both Steve and Dorian want to chime in on this. Steve, you first. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, tremendous, large Latino population in Mecklenburg County. I think 15% of the population here, but 5% of the registered voters. So that same disparity you see in Mecklenburg County that you see statewide. Dan Ramirez was the first Latino elected in Mecklenburg County. He was a Republican county commissioner, first elected in 2002. And then right now, I believe among, you know, CMS, City of Charlotte, Mecklenburg County, there is one Latina, Susan Rodriguez McDowell, represents a district in the south part of Mecklenburg County. She won in 2018, kind of interestingly enough, beat Bill James, right? One of the most conservative members of the county commission. She beat him in that blue wave in 2018. And, you know, there are so few Latinos in that district. Her campaign, she did outreach to that community, but it was really a victory that was powered just by appealing to kind of the broad electorate in South Mecklenburg.
Dorian Call, I have about 45 seconds, but go ahead.
Sure. I think just 2 points, right? So the first is going back to what I mentioned earlier with regards to ensuring that the Latino community has that opportunity to elect, you know, the candidates that they're in, you know, that they prefer, right? And then I think the second thing is about the infrastructure, right? Necessary to be able to have more Latino candidates to be able to run. And it takes resources, it takes money, it takes that infrastructure to be able to have the path to be able to run and you know, do public service. So I think that's the other key thing that we see lacking in many different states, and certainly North Carolina continues to be one of those states as well.
Dorian Call is Director of Civic Engagement Research at the National Association of Latino Elected and Appointed Officials. Wendy Mateo Pasquale is with us, Latino voting advocate and creator of the Latino Civic Engagement Program. And Steve Harrison, our political reporter here at WFAE. We'll continue right after this. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that share Mazda's passion that cars make driving matter. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the Latino population growth in North Carolina and around the country and what that may mean for the future of our political scene here and the impediments and also the ways to make them more, get them more involved in our political process. Steve Harrison is here from WFAE News. Dorian Call with the National Association of Latino Elected and Appointed Officials, and Wendy Mateo Pascual, creator of Latino Civic Engagement here in this area of the country. North Carolina State Representative Ricky Hurtado spoke with ABC 11 Raleigh Durham just before he took office and spoke of his ethnicity.
I'm proud to be the first Latino Democrat and really prominent Latino in a political position in North Carolina, but I certainly hope that I'm not the last.
And he made mention of being the first Democrat, Steve. There have already been two Republicans in the legislature going back to 1995, I think. How significant is it that the first Latino in our legislature was a Republican?
You know, I mean, I think that's really interesting. That was Danny McComas from New Hanover County. Like you said, going back to the 1990s, he was born in Puerto Rico. I mean, I think it does show that among the Latinos that their vote is competitive. I mean, Democrats in national elections, win most Latino votes, but it is not a kind of monolithic group. That their vote is up for grabs. And so, like you said, the first two members of the General Assembly who were Latino were both Republicans. And now the Democrats have elected their first. Ricky Hurtado came in, you know, just in 2020. I mean, so that's a long time with no representation in the party.
And Ricky Hurtado is from Alamance County, District 63. Never mind that he is Latino. He is the first Democrat to flip a seat away from a Republican in that district in the last 10 years. What does that tell you, Steve?
Well, it a little bit is that, you know, in the way our maps are drawn, it's very hard to flip seats, right? Because both parties, well, now the Republicans over the last 10 years, like to draw safe seats. So there's not a lot of opportunities to flip seats. But that Alamance County seat that you talked about, again, this is Ricky Hurtado did not win this on the strength of Hispanic voters. I think the registered Latinos in Alamance County, about 4.5-5% of registered voters. So to win that seat, he had to win, he had to appeal to a broad group of the electorate. I think he won. It was really narrow by 575 votes. I think that district has not been significantly redrawn in this last go around. So this is one that could easily flip back, if Republicans do well later this year.
Could it be said then that he won on the merits of whatever he was campaigning on, whatever the issues he chose to talk about in the campaign? Is that what he won on? Not because he was Latino, obviously, but because of what he had to say.
I mean, I did not cover that race on a, really closely,
right.
But yeah, I just, the numbers are just not there to run a campaign appealing to one particular group. It's just, you can't do it anywhere in North Carolina and expect to win.
So this state has never elected a Latino person from to Congress, to the House or the Senate. And Ricky Hurtado told ABC 11, Raleigh Durham, that our state needs more Latino representation.
It's way past due. It's way past time when we think about the million plus Latino residents in North Carolina. And I think it speaks to the need for greater representation in North Carolina.
So Dorian Call, as the Director of Civic Engagement at the National Association of Latino Elected and Appointed Officials, doesn't that usually start? Doesn't this rise through the ranks usually start at the lower, the municipal and city county levels, as opposed to Congress?
Whenever we see trends towards more representation or more candidates of a particular community, taking office, certainly is at the lower offices, so, your local offices. It's not surprising that we see a large percentage of Latinos being elected to school boards, for example, or your local offices and so forth. I think this is something that, going back to what I mentioned before the break, you're really around the infrastructure, right? And having that infrastructure to have whether it's Latinos or other communities, but certainly since we're talking about Latinos specifically, being able to run for office. And, you know, that takes resources and so forth. The other point that I will make certainly is something that Steve mentioned with regards to, you know, the understanding what the issues are for a particular community. And this sort of goes with the Latino community, certainly, right? We know that it's very diverse. We've seen that time and time again. We also know that the Latino community, you know, shouldn't be taken for granted with regards to their vote. So appealing to what matters to them is really, really key. And that goes with other communities too, right? If you're speaking to the issues that really matter to the community, certainly that's going to appeal a lot more. You know, I think that's going to be the sort of one thing is both a challenge, but also an opportunity for many of the candidates that are running, whether it's Latino candidates or otherwise, to really understand the community and what those issues are that matter most to that community and really investing in that, right? Because I think we've seen that many times before, right, where that doesn't happen.
One of the things that State Representative Ricky Hurtado spoke about to ABC 11 in Raleigh that we don't have the tape on, but he talked about it, is the incredible cost to run, even in the state legislature level. Never mind the House and the Senate in Washington, the state legislature. He spent $500,000, he said, to run and win a race for a job that pays $13,000 a year. Wendy? That's locking out a lot of people who either don't have access to raise that kind of money and certainly don't have it themselves. Is that a bigger burden for people in the Latino community than it would be in the population at large?
Yes, it is. And I mentioned before, that is one of the reasons that a lot of people in the community, that they have the passion, they want to participate, but they need to continue providing for their family, and also how they can get the money to raise the campaign. And again, as Dorian said, we need the infrastructure. We need to create coalition between the party and the different organizations that we can support the Latino that want to run, to have the resources to be able to engage the community and be able to win, because our people right now doesn't have the resources and the infrastructure to be able to get to one of the positions. We have 4 years, 3 years ago in 2019, we have Jorge Millares running for the city. And one of the situations with Jorge was he didn't raise the enough money to run the campaign. And he did really good to be the first time that we have a Latino in many years running, but he didn't have the resources and the support to be able to pass the primary. So we need the infrastructure, we need the resources to be able to move the community.
Wendy, you've been in your organization, been working for years now to make voting, running for office, making people's voices heard, something that is becoming more and more easy to do. How would you assess the results of your efforts to date?
I think that we have made an impact in the people, educating the people, and it is growing. We went from 1% of the Latino voter in Charlotte to a 12%. And part of the work that we was doing was the work that moved to change the sheriff on Charlotte, and for a sheriff that doesn't support the 287G. And every year we see how in all the elections, the Latino vote is increasing. And we have to have in mind that the hard part is to move the community to vote during the local election, midterm election, and local election, because for the presidential, it's a lot of resources, a lot of information. Everybody know about the president. But when we have the local election, it's the hard part to move people, to educate, that they can understand what is important for the Latino community to vote in local election. And one of the things that with the work that I have been doing is that the political system in the Latino country is totally different of the system that we have here. For example, in our country, we don't vote for a sheriff. we don't vote to elect judges. And that is a very important figure for the Latino community. But we have to educate people why we vote. And also, we don't have that division between city and county and Board of Education in our country to make the people to understand why it's important that I vote for the Board of Education and have Latino representation in the Board of Education in a system that where 27% of the students are Latino and we don't have any representation. So it's a lot of investment on educate our community why the local elections are important and why we need to run.
I suppose the good news, Dorian, is that your organization, it's a national organization, says that political participation among Latino voters is reaching historic highs and that the Latino population is becoming an increasingly important fixture, to use your words, in national politics. So given that, how long do you think it will take for representation at various levels among Latinos to be on par with their population in terms of numbers?
Right. You know, I think part of it is something that we really shouldn't conflate, right? One is the voting electorate, right? Or the Latino voting electorate specifically. And certainly Latinos have made great strides when it comes to voting, certainly in their voter turnout and so forth. And we saw that certainly in the 2020 election where a record number of Latinos came out to vote. And certainly we saw that in 2018, but certainly there's still a lot of room for opportunities rather to be able to reach the Latino community, as Wendy was talking about, you know, having more resources, making it easier, not harder to go out and vote. Certainly providing the information that Latinos are looking for. I'll just share with you really quickly. We conducted a poll and some additional research as well with regards to the Latino community specifically on what they really wanted to see with regards to their election. And, you know, it varied. They wanted options. They wanted options to go out and vote, whether it was mailing in their ballot or actually going to the polls, making sure that you know, they had that information. Even if it was that they wanted to go and send in their mail-in ballot, it was really about understanding that process, right? And really giving them that information about that process in a place where it's going to be reliable, right? So an official source, whether it's from the county's registrar's office or from an organization that can be reliable. So that's one thing. And I think the other thing is something that we've already touched on with regards to the representation, political representation, specifically from candidates, having the infrastructures built, having infrastructure and the resources for more Latino candidates to really run for office as well. Now, the challenge here is the fact that those candidates, like any other candidate, also has to go out and invest those resources to be able to reach the Latino community, certainly. You know, you shouldn't take it for granted. And I think that's one of the other key things is that, again, even when you do have more Latinos running, it's also about investing and reaching out to the Latino community on the issues that really matter to them, really speaking to them, right, in a less transactional way, but a more meaningful way, right, in a meaningful engagement way.
Steve, these new voter maps that we have in North Carolina that are awaiting a decision about whether or not we'll put them into place, the Supreme Court is looking at that, the state Supreme Court. When we talked about objections to these maps in the past, we've usually focused on the political gerrymandering part of it and also the fact that it seems to disenfranchise or appear it could disenfranchise a significant number of black voters. What impact would these maps as drawn have on the influence of the Latino vote? And is that being considered at all?
It really isn't being considered. And it just goes back to that math problem or the math situation we talked about earlier. You know, there is just not a concentration of Latino voters in any great strength in the state that you could draw a Latino majority state house or Senate seat, or even a Latino plurality seat, certainly based on registered voters. So it's just the math isn't there yet. So like you said, I mean, so much of the debate over these maps has been about African-American votes and whether those have been diluted, because, you know, we've talked about Mike on the show. There's a district in Charlotte now, you know, which contains almost solely the city of Charlotte packs a lot of Democratic voters into one place. A lot of those voters are Black voters. In the northeast part of the state, there was a seat that held by G.K. Butterfield that where the Black vote has been reduced. So you see that with the African-American community, but among Latinos at this point in 2022, the math isn't there to draw opportunity districts. That will change, I'm sure, over the next decade, the next 10 or 20 years, but right now it's just not there.
Wendy, you spoke a minute ago about education and educating Latino voters, not only about the importance of voting, but who to vote for and the fact that you can vote for offices in this area of the world that perhaps you couldn't have voted for in your native country. But the Raleigh News and Observer reported last fall that a lot of Latinos don't participate because it's such a difficult process for them to figure out how to register to vote, how to figure out where to vote. They also have little or no access to information about the candidates, what they represent, what issues they support. Is that your impression too?
Yes, and again, it's a lot of information we need to invest more. I think that not only, sometimes the party and the community abroad see the Latino participation and responsibility of the Latino. I think that everybody need to jump and be able to invest and educate the Latino how to navigate the process. A lot of the information is still, at least on Mecklenburg, is still on English. And there are a lot of voters that they don't speak English. They need the information in Spanish that they be able to understand the process and participate. So we need more investment from the party, from the Board of Election, from the community.
Let me just jump in here because I only have a minute left. But is the Latino media helping people navigate this process? Are they providing them the Spanish translation for a lot of these things that are in English normally and that people who don't speak English fluently are having trouble understanding?
Yes, at least on Mecklenburg, my experience, the Latino media are doing different program, doing information on the newspaper and the radio. I personally participate in a lot of radio show educating the community, but it's not enough because we need the larger community participation, because including the Latino is something that will benefit the community in general.
And when we come back, I want to talk about a little bit more about this the cultural differences and also some of the other impediments that face this community as they try to vote or want to vote, and what true representation would look like if it could happen. We'll do that when we come back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to those who believe a car should stir one's emotions and deliver a heightened state of driving. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the growth in the Latino population here and around the country and their impact on voting and running for office and some of the challenges that they face as they try to cope with learning this system if you're from another country. Steve Harrison, our political reporter at WFAE, is with us along with Wendy Mateo Pascual, Latino voting advocate and creator of the Latino Civic Engagement Program in this area, and Dorian Call, who is the director of civic engagement research at the National Association of Latino Elected and Appointed Officials. Dorian, Wendy talked about education, and a lot of the people who are coming here, who are hoping to grow the Latino population, are coming from different countries where governments are not to be trusted necessarily, and trust plays a big role in this, and where elections are seen to be corrupt and seem to be not really important at all because the winner is going to be the predetermined leader of the country. To date, that is not the case here. We'll see what happens in the coming years. But how do you instill trust in the process to people who have come here from elsewhere where the process is not to be trusted, Dorian?
Certainly. You know, I think this sort of speaks to the diversity of the Latino community, right, where there are definitely going to be different needs. And I think you speak of one specifically of the immigrant population, right, that has naturalized and has become a citizen and therefore eligible to vote. One of the key things here is that when we're looking at the research, right, when we're looking at the research specifically around naturalized versus native born, naturalized actually have a slightly higher likelihood of voting if they get registered to vote, whether it's through their naturalization ceremony, right after their naturalization ceremony, or shortly thereafter. They have a higher likelihood. So it's really about the investment, right? And it's not only about the investment to get more people registered, as Wendy mentioned earlier in the show, but it's really about also engaging that community as well in not only the issues, but certainly in the way that they communicate, whether it's through social media, whether it's in a place that really they can get this information and really demystify the process of voting. And certainly noting the differences that exist, whether it's something along the lines of, you know, which candidate you're looking at. But from a strictly nonpartisan perspective, certainly that's the work that we've done around civic engagement. And we do civic engagement work where we're engaging the Latino community directly. And one of the things that we found time and time again is that throughout the Latino community, you know, they're really looking for that information. They're really looking about demystifying the overall process. And certainly the immigrant population is really looking at it from different perspectives, including language barriers, right, that still might exist. And therefore, providing that information in the language that they best prefer certainly is one key thing. But there are other things, too. I mentioned mail-in ballots in different states and so forth, but also just, you know, looking at the process. What does the process look like? Does it mean looking at it from the perspective of, you know, we do have an elected position that you might not be familiar with? What does that mean? What does that elected position really mean to you as a person in the community? How does that impact you in your daily life in a sense? So really talking about it from that perspective is really key.
It is no secret, Steve, that the United States has a broken immigration system, and we have constant debates about what to do to stem the tide of undocumented immigrants crossing our southern border and the ratcheting up of the approach toward those people by the previous administration has had a residual effect on a lot of Latinos here and on whether there is a... whether there's prejudice in the general population against Latino candidates. Is that something we have to consider?
I think it's definitely something worth thinking about, worth talking about. But what makes, I think, the issue so interesting is that, you know, after all of the fights over immigration and the controversy over the last 4 years, you know, Donald Trump, I think, did a little bit better among Latino voters in 2020 than he did in 2016. I think that's right.
I think it is right.
I know he did a little bit better among African-American voters, not much, but a little bit. And that, I think, just goes to show kind of how complex Latino voters are just not monolithic. I mean, there are people from different countries, different cultures, and they are not all one group. And so it can be very hard to kind of make sense of issues and trends and to talk about people in kind of broad strokes. That was a really fascinating election.
Wendy, if there is prejudice against Latinos as candidates or otherwise, what seem to be the key misconceptions at work?
I think what Stephen was saying, that a lot of candidates think that the most important thing for the Latino voter is the immigration issues. And that is not right. So a lot of people, the economy issues is more important for a lot of Latino. The health, access to healthcare is the important issue. Education, access to education. The education is a big topic for us. We want our children to go to college to be able to have a high education. So how we, the system and the candidate and provide access and have a proposal that provide access to higher education to our family, to our children, that engage the Latino community. So again, I think that the investment and the conversation has to get out from the immigrant issues and go to the other issues and topics that are important for the Latino to be able to engage the community to participate.
Dorian, the issues that Wendy just brought up that she's hearing about that are important to the Latino community, at least in this part of the country, sound very much like the issues. They sound exactly like the issues that are important to almost all voters across the spectrum. You may take different points of view on those issues, but nonetheless, the issues themselves are important. But what are we missing? What issues might we be missing, Dorian, by the lack of representation of Latino candidates and office holders who maybe would bring a different point of view or a different set of issues to the table?
Certainly. I mean, I think that's right, right? I mean, I think with regards to the issues that matter to Latinos, are not that much different, right, from the overall population. And we've seen that time and time again where you know, we make the assumption that Latinos only care about one issue, as Wendy mentioned, right, which is immigration. But it does vary. And one of the key things is about understanding that. And a lot of the time, the way that you know, certainly candidates have approached the community is really talking about that one issue or just one issue. And ignoring the fact that they are thinking about it from the perspective of, you know, how can they provide for their family, for example, within the Latino community, how they can, you know, whether, you know, they're going to have a job, you know, or whether they can have a good paying job. So all of these things are really, really highly important to the Latino community. And again, a lot of the candidates sometimes miss that or take the Latino vote as this monolith, right, as Steve mentioned earlier, as opposed to looking at it from a very diverse point of view. And I think we mentioned earlier around the immigrant population, right? That's just one component of the Latino community, especially in North Carolina, where the community is certainly younger. And if it's younger and certainly turning of age, most likely they're native born. And therefore, they're going to have a lot of different views than, say, their parents or immigrant population of the Latino community, or at least slightly different, right? And there's going to be some overlap, certainly, the economy, jobs and so forth, health care, as Wendy mentioned. But all these things are really important to note and not automatically assume that the Latino community is going to be one issue, if you will. And I think that's really been the biggest stumbling block, is that Latinos are just seen as one, right, or one issue-based community.
Steve, if you look at the numbers of the growth in the Latino population here and around the country, to be truly representative of the number of Latino residents in our state, there should be 17 or 18 Latino members among the legislature's 170 members. And if those numbers are to grow, I'm just curious about where they would come from, where those representatives would be located, because the growth in these populations is primarily, I think, situated in the urban areas of the state. So would they all automatically be coming from Mecklenburg, from Wake, from the Greensboro area, et cetera?
From the cities, that's right. Also in the Sandhills, you know, the area like around Cumberland County is a large Latino population. I kind of wanted to go back to that idea of representation. I think if you look at an area of government locally where there is a significant problem of underrepresentation, it would be on the school board. Right now in CMS, Black students are the largest group at 36%. This year, I believe it was either this year or last year, Latino students became the second largest group at 27%. So there are more Latino students than white non-Latino students. And so that is, you see it in school districts, a tremendous growth. And those are tremendous needs. Those are special needs. In terms of bilingual education. I mean, there's just so many issues, and there are no Latino members of the school board right now. So I think that's like this area where there is a really big need and a big underrepresentation. We talked earlier about, you know, kind of like candidates starting out locally and winning local races. And the Board of Education would be arguably kind of the most important or natural place to start.
Let me also ask about this, because the maps as drawn, if they go into effect, tend to put all of the Democrats in the urban areas and the Republicans control the rural areas. So what does that mean for the Latino vote? If they're most likely to be elected on a statewide basis, at least from urban areas, does that mean those Latino candidates have to be Democrats if they want to win?
I don't think so. I think that I don't think that, like we talked about earlier, I think right now in North Carolina, the numbers aren't there in terms of registered voters to run a campaign that is going to appeal only to Latino voters. So for a Latino candidate to win, they are going to have to they're going to have to reach everyone, right? They're going to have to run a campaign that appeals to a broad swath of voters. And I think that can be both a Republican, either a Republican or a Democrat. I think the key is just to get the numbers of people running, to get more people running, because the more you have, you know, some candidates just aren't going to be good. They won't, they'll find out they're not a natural for it. They can't do it. And you'll find others that, hey, they have a real knack for reaching people and and connecting. So the more people you have run, then, you know, the better your chances are going to be. So I think that's an important place to start.
One of the main thrusts, Wednesday, of your program, as I understand it, is that you're working to dispel the belief that political involvement must be party-based. But in this country, if you want to be successful as a candidate, you have to run either as a Republican or a Democrat. Independents and third-party candidates don't generally have a ghost of a chance to make it. If most Latinos live in urban areas and those areas end up being gerrymandered in such a way that they are the only areas that favor Democrats, doesn't that make it important to be associated with a party? Or do you agree with what Steve just said?
Yeah, it is important to be associated with a party. But again, my work is to motivate people to participate and engage, and will be the party work to engage that community that is there and make some Latino to run and have that opportunity. So I think that our job is to educate people and motivate people. We need more people to run. I have the projection. I think that by the 2024, we'll have a lot of people running because the work that we are doing in the education and the party have to understand, both parties, to understand that they need to invest more on the Latino community and engage more Latino to participate in Rome.
How optimistic, Dorian, are you about the future and about encouraging increasing participation in the political process among members of the Latino community in terms of voting, in terms of running for office, and in terms of being elected to office? How optimistic are you?
I'm relatively optimistic. I think as long as, again, as I mentioned, certainly at the top of the show, with regards to having the opportunity to elect the candidates that they prefer, right? The Latino community specifically is in place and there is a fairness about it, right? So that's really key. I think as long as the investment continues, but also grows within the Latino community as it relates to engagement, certainly that's another really key component. And certainly the infrastructure that I've mentioned before is either established or continues to grow, right? To allow for additional opportunities for candidates, certainly Latino candidates, to run for office. I think as long as those three things at least happen and continue to happen and continue to grow, I think we can be fairly optimistic about the possibility.
You agree with that?
However, you know, that's not the reality of it, right? We know that, right. That isn't quite true, right? But, you know, I think from that perspective, it's very optimistic.
So I have 45 seconds left. Wendy, what's greasing the skids? What's making it easier to achieve these goals? And what do you see as the major obstacles? Unmute yourself. You have 30 seconds.
Again, will be the investment on education and to support Latino to run from the community, from the party, from the different organization, from us as a Latino. We need to come in coalition and raise and support one people to run. But infrastructure, education, and investment will make the difference.
And you've both used the term infrastructure. I have about 10 seconds. What does that mean?
For me, mean to have a organization, coalition that will support the Latino. From the party to invest, the party to
And that's Wendy Mateo Pascual, Latino voting advocate, creator of the Latino Civic Engagement Program. She joins us along with Dorian Call, director of civic engagement research at the National Association of Latino Elected and Appointed Officials, and Steve Harrison, our political reporter here at WFAE News. Thank you all for the hour. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, pledging to help end child hunger in the Carolinas through ongoing support of Second Harvest Food Bank of Metrolina. Details about this initiative at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.